Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter.
Hi, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on wherever you are tuning in to listen to our podcast. Sheetal, Nilesh and I tend to kind of talk about technology in a interesting and fun way, make it more relatable. We cover a wide variety of topics, you know, whether it's blockchain, artificial intelligence, food technology, clothes technology. One of the most fascinating areas which catches everyone's interest, maybe also because it's probably made the maximum unicorns and billionaires, is fintech. And while we've covered it in different ways, we thought it'd be really, really interesting to kind of really get someone who's kind of lived and breathed that space in India, someone who's been part of its evolution, you know, from nothing to where it is today. We're really, really fortunate to have Naveen Surya with us. Naveen's been part of the fintech industry in kind of a very multidimensional way. While most people kind of straddle a couple of them, not everybody is there. No, I don't think of many people who are there in all. So most people have, you know, worked in the fintech space, you know, that check mark, you know, Naveen's done that. Some people have a fintech startup, you know, check that. Very few make successful fintech startups, which Naveen has done. Then, of course, some people also move on to the investor side, you know, which is okay, you know, you kind of do well and then you kind of invest in others. But the other side, you know, Naveen actually is one of the very, very few people I know who's actually been part of the whole industry process of growing the ecosystem. You know, that's a true give back. You know, not many people kind of go and step back and say, you know, now I'm going to do something to grow the entire ecosystem, you know, make fintech regulation better, you know, work with the RBI, work with SEBI and all that. So I think he's done a lot of that. And of course, his interests have evolved over time, but he's kind of stayed close to fintech. Today is more of an active investor. He mentors a lot of startups. And he is, of course, someone who's very, very closely associated with technology and takes fun in the small things about technology. And just to illustrate that point before we kind of call Naveen on, is that he very recently, I think on Feb 28th, Naveen posted this very interesting thing on LinkedIn, which about his IWC watch, and which kind of, you know, changed the date of the leap year. And the fascinating thing that, as he pointed out, was that here is this piece of technology that, you know, there is this one aspect or feature of it which comes to life once in 4 years and works seamlessly, you know. So, I mean, I think he takes pleasure in the small things of technology. And we hope to kind of have a very, very interesting chat with Naveen and learn tons and tons from him. So, thank you once again, Naveen, for kind of joining us. And we look forward to a great conversation with you.
I actually, Naveen, I'm the type to jump straight into the conversation. So can I please jump in with my first question to you? So 17 years ago, you did things which changed and revolutionized the electronic payment system in India. Cut to today, when fintech is a buzzword, everybody's talking about different technologies in the space of fintech. I just want to get a sense of what has it been in the last 17 years. So what are the key highlights for you of the last 17 years? Not as a personal journey, but as an industry is what I want to get a sense of.
So just one correction before that, Sheetal, is 24 years. I started my entrepreneur journey in 2000.
Oh, okay. I somehow thought of 2007 is That's what
the,
I had.
You're absolutely right. For one of the business, which I obviously became famous and everybody associated me with Itchcash, which got founded somewhere around 2004-05. So you're right in that way. But my entrepreneur journey, and very few people know that I actually know Samiran since my management trainee days in TCS. And I've learned a lot from him, by the way. I mean, he just talks less, but the immense kind of a leadership stature he had when I was in TCS and the kind of work we were doing together. I worked with him, under him also some projects. So first, thanks for that, Samiran, and nice meeting you today, Sheetal. So yeah, 2000 was the official entrepreneur journey, you could say. I mean, come from a business family, so that way it's been lifelong journey, except 3-4 years when I was in TCS doing work for others, which I think you've also changed now, working for yourself. So industry milestone for payment industry, which I think my first business itself was a financial services. It was an exchange which had an element of payment, but more B2B in nature. In fact, very few people know it was more like a virtual currency which got accepted in between the platforms. Sorry, between the members on the platform. And that time there was no blockchain, there was no crypto. But we had invented it in the year 2000 itself without that technology. Then the retail part of it became in a 2004-5 with HKS. But while we were doing it, and like you rightly said about the industry, I remember somewhere around 2004-5, RBI and ministry started working on first formal, you could say, fintech segment, which was payments. Also started setting up the Department of Payment and Settlement Systems. And this was all around one bill that came, which was the Payment and Settlement Systems Act, which actually was birthed because of 9/11 in the US. They wanted to trail financial transactions. FATF got strong. Everybody said that we need to make sure that the money trail is maintained, is controlled, and therefore the government has to know what is happening in payment system. So 2011 is when finally the bill got approved and it became an act. The department was already there in RBI. In fact, I had already started a payments business in 2004-5. So we were watching this journey very closely. And this was the time we realized that we have to work as an industry to deal with the government and the regulator, which is RBI in this case. Even today, RBI is the sole regulator when it comes to money and the payments. So if you see at that stage, I think the digital payment in country from, let's say, literally zero, other than the credit card, I can't say zero, but let's say something that was happening, very minuscule. Early days estimate was somewhere around 2% of the entire spends in the country.
Correct.
Today, if you talk about, you're easily talking about 25 to 30% of that. And if you take 2011 to now, I think these are like what, decade and a half, not too many years, less than that actually. So this is a journey that India has made. And this was the first big milestone. And this is the bigger achievement that put the India on the whole, you could say, the fintech map. In fact, even today within the fintech, obviously payments contribute a lot, followed by lending. And now every other space is getting hotter and hotter, right? Be it insurance, be it the wealth. So every companies have grown, especially around COVID time. So on the payments milestone, one was the outcome from 3% to now close to 25-30%. Again, setting up the bill coming, after that, the department getting set. If you see from the department, from the first license for a non-bank ever, other than the NBFC in the RBI, they were only used to dealing with banks. This was the first of its kind with the intervention of technology and financial services, where they agreed to license a non-bank entity as a payment, PPIs as they used to call, prepaid issuers, right? So that was the first guidelines that came. If you again see from there to today, you had multiple licenses emerging out of that department. After PPI, today you also have account aggregator. You also had somewhere in between, I think, some other licenses. Also BBPOU and BBPS, the entire billing payment systems, the entire NPCI creation that again happened after this. So if you see from in terms of milestones, one is outcome, but the number of licenses that were enabled by RBI within the payment system in that brief span of time is many. The number of entities again within the fintech ecosystem is one of the largest. Almost one third entities within fintech ecosystem. While the number keeps changing from 7 to 12,000, will always be largest number in terms of payments. So that number continuously grow. So if you see from a department, and again, let's not forget the bigger milestone of payments bank, which again got created around similar time. So in last decade and a half, you have seen all this kind of outcome. And most importantly, NPCI creating world's biggest success story for the fast payment, starting with IMPS, moving to UPI. And today UPI is a known story, so I don't want to spend more time. But that is what again sealed the India's stature in the whole world, that it's no longer somebody who's laggard. We could do our own technology, we could do our own ideas, and we could be much bigger and bigger than all the countries in the world. And again, as I said, fast payments, India is the leader today in the country. And of course, very recently, what you saw, CBDC, which is where RBI is acting as a startup itself, right? So CBDC is again the next game changer. My personal belief is the success you've seen with UPI, the potential of CBDC is actually literally 10 to 100x more. Why do I say so? Because payment systems work with the existing payment instruments, which are not currency. CBDC is actually a form of currency in a virtual. So where you have a physical currency where it doesn't work in digital, right? The physical paper note doesn't work in virtual. So you had a need of money, especially in electronic form, debit card, credit card, PPI. wallet, all those instruments. But the moment you have your currency, which also is in a form of digital, your transaction, the finality of transaction. And for an example, there's no payment and settlement lag. There is payment and settlement. The settlement finality is at the same time, right, as you exchange your money. So there are game-changing things that are possible. And again, within CBDC, there are all kinds of possibility. India has just started with the retail P2P and P2M. You will see a lot more happening. Again, on a wholesale side, you will see again a lot more happening in a global side. So all kinds of things are happening. I think it's just the start. Also keep in mind, economy has grown from like 9, 10 to 5th and aspiring to be 3rd. And I think we'll be there. Spends are increasing. And the overall growth in the country, the way it's going, at the same time, cash is still growing. So the potential for the payment is still very, very large.
That is interesting. So in fact, a couple of things, Naveen, that you really touched upon. No, one is the this role of the regulator. And I think we've kind of heard it in forums. But, you know, normally a regulator is seen as someone who is constraining and, you know, controlling. But I think in our case, the RBI has been a very, very forward-thinking organization in most parts. So I think maybe, you know, a little bit of, because of your proximity to how this happened, you know, a little thinking on that. And number two is this, the other point that you mentioned is that in this highly competitive kind of world, you know, how did you manage to get everybody, or how did this industry kind of speak in one voice? You know, because that is also the reason why it's like that whole thing, like, you know, we are together, market will grow. But normally people, you know, selfish interests say that I will take a bigger pie of, bigger share of the small pie. But in this case, y'all grew the pie so big that everybody got a bigger share of it.
So two parts to it. One, I think initial days, it was a lot easier, obviously. Things are a lot more complex because the association, the Payment Council of India, which I started with my other industry colleague, friend, Vishwas Patel, who was running CC Avenue that time. So if you see, there were only three or four entities, three large ones, us as a, it's case on the payment issuance side, two on acquiring side, Builders, Vasu, Ajay, and Vishwas Patel, who was running CC Avenue. Vishwas had already working on a small committee within IMI, and there was aspiration to grow that. And as the regulation came in, while they were not getting regulated at that time, Zarbe said that initially we're not looking at account aggregators or payment gateways, payment gateways and payment aggregators, not account aggregator, that's a different term. So the focus was on PPI, and the PPI at that time were handful, and some of us were in business, about 7-8. And everybody knew that RBI does not understand this community. This is a new experience for them. And unless we all behave ourselves and unless we all work together to really align what are the larger industry goal and what are the best practices that we will have to adhere to, and what are the, let's say, malpractices we will have to ourselves curb if you want to grow this industry. And it was also easier because all the founders were very clearly focused on the growth, but in a regulated and a, let's say, what we call is a sustainable growth, right? That was the thought process. So it was a lot easier that stage. So we all came together. It was a critical need. Even RBI was very clear that we don't want to talk to all of you, while we can always, if there are specific issues pertaining to our entity. But it's always easier that if you talk in one voice, what do you want, what we want from you. So it became by default, the small committee becoming a Payment Council of India. I chaired it for 12 years, again, as a voluntary role. The industry was huge support. Everybody worked very closely. And from there today, like I said, each of these license holders, committees, even remittances, global, domestic, all of them are part of it. Yeah, the environment has got complex, but the base things have not changed, that industry has to work with the regulators. Regulators and industry both know that ultimately we exist for the end consumers and the interest of the country's growth. Those two are kind of paramount principles. As long as anything that we talk and anything that RBI brings on those two principles, there's no way that you can actually keep it away. You have to follow that. And yes, there has been hits and misses. It's not that it has always been a very smooth journey. Like any startup, it has always been, or like any industry that evolves, it's always a kind of spiral thing, right? It keeps going up and down, but keeps moving up gradually, right? So there has been kind of different licenses, different policies, sometimes good, sometimes bad. But good part is the dialogue was continuously happening. I do remember one time all the PPIs, compulsory KYC was to happen. Then for some reason, it kind of was not accepted that there should be relaxation. Later on, some relaxation were brought back. So again, each of these consultations helped. Sometimes there is a time mismatch as to what industry want and what RBI wants. But again, RBI has a much bigger role to play, right? But ultimately, everybody agreed that while we don't want to make the country cashless, but we want less cash in the system. The only way less cash can happen in the country is when the ecosystem, with guidance of regulator, work together and support of the government policies. And let's not forget, India is unique with the very successful digital public infra model, right? So that also started coming in. So again, it's a three-way approach where the collaboration has worked.
So Naveen, a slightly different question, but you know, one of the things, and you speak about self-regulation. So in the fintech space, it was obviously something that y'all agreed to do. But what happens in the world of technology is that there is always this debate about technology companies not self-regulating in alignment with what is known as the greater good or the betterment of the consumer. It's always greed and profit oriented. And that's something that is typically what everybody talks about. What is it that the world of technology can learn from the world of finance from that perspective of self-regulation, working with regulatory bodies and working with policymakers in order to ensure that the industry per se grows and it's not just one organization which is profiting or, you know, a couple of organizations which are in the profit space?
I mean, very good question. Two things. First, I want to clarify. See, there is two kind of self-regulation. One that an industry does voluntarily, right, which is what has been happening so far. And one at a stage, it becomes more formalized. It becomes more governance-oriented and even, let's say, authorized and controlled through regulators. So actually, the country is now evolving and moving into the next phase where all these industry bodies are moving into a different phase where they will be, some of them, if not all of them, will be authorized by RBI to act as a formal SRO, like we have FDI, like we have MFI, right? So that's a phase we are in. Now, here the role and responsibility of an industry ecosystem again changes a lot more from just merely, like you said, growth focused, from merely increasing the, let's say merely negotiating on the policies for your benefit and let's say betterment. It's actually almost like a quasi-regulatory role, similar to what RBI is going to play. And again, it has to be balanced with all the ecosystem players. It can't be just the industry body. It has to be consumer. It has to be merchant. So that's a role. That's a transition we are in. Now, coming to tech, and I think you're probably talking about big techs. I would say, fortunately, while some of those issues exist, and I don't think globally anybody has solved it. This issue is not, I mean, I was just looking at Sora today, and I mean, we already know what's happening with ChatGPT. The problem, or I don't know whether it's a problem or rather the challenge is that because the things are moving so fast, by the time it's like you're tempting a target, you're shooting by the time the target is moved. So that's the challenge with most of the governments. And by the time, let's say you regulate what is happening on app, probably you'll move to AI apps, right? So that's the challenge that remains. But so one is that it's a moving problem, but I would say that we still are relatively fortunate that in India, it has been well balanced. If you see from a fintech perspective, the regulator and government is very clear. That's a finance first approach, is a customer first approach. In fact, customer the foremost, I would say priority. That any customer protection angle slightly coming to risk, they immediately intervene. So India model in that way is slightly different. If you see, while we do have a big tech players, they're all playing a role in the ecosystem, but they know that India is slightly different. We can't do whatever we want here. The rules here are a lot stricter when it comes to financial regulations, right? So compliance and those who are taking chances or advantages, well, maybe they got 3 years window of the COVID period because the attention was somewhere else. We're already seeing those things now getting corrected. Sometimes, as we say that in the corrections, sometimes even certain good people also suffer. But let's say this is a phase where the correction will happen and you'll have, again, sustainable, organized development. The growth is still very high in the industry. On the big tech, I think, so by the way, one thing we didn't touch while we focus on payments, that's not the way payments got evolved. Today, RBI also for the last 2 to 3 years have a dedicated department for fintech called fintech departments. Again, this is a great thing because RBI knows that any new subject, we need a dedicated team, we need dedicated resources, and they need to give full attention to the sector, which is evolving. So that exists now. And I do know that they have looked at the subject of a big tech, how they operate, what they do, and they have certain plans. I can't talk about it because it's part of a committee. But all I could say that the government here and the regulator here and the industry ecosystem are working very closely. They know the potential risks. They know the potential misuse. but they also know the benefits. See, the reality is also that sometimes you could draw scale with their partnerships. So trying to balance, and I think an appropriate framework would emerge soon, similar to SRO, which is a next level formal framework, and that is in works. So you'll see it in next 6 to 18 months, all of that emerging.
So Naveen, just again kind of switching gears a little bit here, is that for someone who comes into this sector maybe today, you know, you look at, you know, lot of companies solving lot of problems, but for a, I don't know, maybe a young entrepreneur, maybe a startup or whatever, you know, what are the big problems that you think that still need solving? I mean, in terms of, you know, what are the things that people can work on, and what are, you know, are things out there that are attracting interest more from the consumer as well as from the investor? I mean, like, you know, typically when you look at it, oh, what will I do? There are so many payment gateways. There are so many, you know, there's no space for me.
So two, three things, Samir. First, this whole growth is driven because of the very low penetration of financial services in India. If you look at the data, right, overall, banking is probably 50% plus adult population. You talk about payments, which is now moved brought rapidly around 30%, 25, 30, it keeps fluctuating. But like I said, that cash is still growing parallelly, right? So the opportunity still exists. If you look at everything else after that, they're all in single digit of the growth of penetration, right? You talk insurance, you're talking about an average across all the insurances, 3 to 4%. You talk about lending, you compare China from a GDP ratios, you're 10 times behind. So if you take any sector and then you go deeper, and I mean, I can't go into specifics because that's like a too detailed and then specific opportunity. But the reality is another simple example, right? Take credit card for an example. So many years, so many companies. Let's say if in our credit bureaus, we have about 700, 800 million consumers who would have taken loans sometime. All the credit card companies put together would have issued about 150 million kind of cards. So again, right there is a gap of 4 to 5x. Now, I understand all of them may not be carded or not card worthy or credit worthy. When I say card, it doesn't necessarily mean a physical format, but fundamentally, if you are a credit worthy, you should have a credit card or a wallet, whatever you want to call it, right? Correct. So the reality is that gap exists. Again, fundamentally, there was a time when there was an issue about the business model and the cost and the feasibility. As the economy is growing, as spends are growing, as the technology, this whole DPI infra that has kind of worked with us, the potential to adopt. And by the way, one data point, the adoption rate in India, 64% in fintech, is one of the largest in the world. So with the customer readiness increasing, if you combine this factor, the growth is very high. So any smart person, if he goes, identify a right, let's say use case, stick to it, stay focused, execute it, it's a hard work. And also keep a balance between that is not just a tech play, it's also a finance business. You know, that's what people are learning in last 2-3 years with regulators. So finance first approach, compliance first approach, technology as an advantage, you're going to be a winner.
Very interesting. I mean, I think you've kind of given lots of pointers in terms of, I mean, you just need to look at the whole landscape, and you, while on the one side there is huge growth, there is a lot of other things that are lagging. Yeah,
I mean, I see 20 to 25%, no reason that India shouldn't grow between a very high two or three digit growth within the, let's say, overall ecosystem of financial services cum fintech. Considering the penetration levels, right? That's, and the economic growth. And when you combine those two.
To talk about women, right? Because while a lot of the world and the country talks about fintech and finance and inclusion and inclusivity and all of that, I think somewhere in the entire conversation, as a woman, I feel a woman kind of gets very ignored. And case in point, I remember I had called up a company and asked them to come and meet me for some investments. And they sent some representation and representative, and the representative had the entire conversation with my husband. Okay, decided to completely ignore me in that conversation. And they called back the next day and said, you know, what is your decision? And I said, I'm absolutely nowhere investing with you because I called you. It was about my money, and you decided that it's only my husband you will have the conversation with. So forget it. It's not happening. But not just that. You know, there are so many women who are earning not necessarily very, very large sums of money, but there is a whole ecosystem of women who are women entrepreneurs, work from home women. They come into the system because now everybody is taking their salaries into bank accounts or through GPA, etc. But it's a large community which is completely ignored by the world of finance, which I'm just trying to understand what are the barriers that exist in the world of finance for them not to want to speak to it.
Your statement reminds me of an African case study, right? You see, you want to see an opportunity or you want to see a glass half full or... And by the way, I'm associated with two companies. Both are women-driven and focused on women. Lakshmi is one, which is run by Preeti Rati. They see this as a huge opportunity that there is... And I mean, even we discuss very often, right? Very simple thing. That there are so many credit cards. Some of them even talk about women. But is there a genuine differentiation between them? Let's say if you want to go and do certain things which are women-specific, let's say maybe cosmetics, do you even get a very specific deal? The reality is no. The answer is no. Which means everybody's doing a lip service. There's no proper customization. And this is, by the way, Sital, when I think financial services is one of the large employer of a woman employer. I'm not saying they are the best ratios, but relatively better. So I would say time is to take charge in your hands, right? So all your fellow women entrepreneurs need to start saying that we want to build for women. And by the way, it's not easy. I even heard some entrepreneurs saying that we're not sure whether investors also like just the women. But I've seen mixed experience. I've seen Lakshmi, which is doing well. I've seen a few other companies are struggling. But I'm saying there is an opportunity. And I agree with you that this is a genuine problem. And I think the world has changed and people in the existing system needs to realize that the financial decisions are now equally taken by women. In fact, maybe I live in a household where, in fact, my decisions are also taken by my household. Let's say my bhabhi is the smartest manager with my dad. My mom used to be a smarter money manager. So I've seen the reverse examples also. The question is, how do we use that energy, bring it out to the front? So I'm 100% agreeing with your point that this is a issue that exists. Question is, do we keep talking about it or we see it as an opportunity? And more entrepreneurs come and start focusing on this and start delivering. It's not easy. Obviously, when you focus on one segment, you also have to kind of be true. Loyal to it, expand it. Sometimes it's also about women that sometimes they think that it's too focused on us. So are they big enough? I mean, should we work with two niche player who's just focused on us? So it's also another way issue that our customers also comfortable. That's another feedback that we got in one of the companies that sometimes women consumer thought that, okay, they're too focused on us. Will they be large enough? It's also a insecurity within the segment. So I'm saying it's a balancing thing, but good part is more and more women becoming financial independent, taking their own decisions. I think more they demand, and some of them actually again taking the entrepreneur path will solve it. Probably next 5 to 7 years, things definitely will improve. I don't think we'll be able to fully solve it, but it will improve.
As long as we solve a little bit, I'm happy. The needle needs to shift.
So that way, there are a lot of entrepreneurs now working. And as long as we keep this noise on, they would be. By the way, this issue exists even at the top. So take an example, GFF, when we were hosting. For last 2 years, I don't know about this year, but last 2 years, there was a parameter that how do we get women speakers contribution high. And we had attempted various ratios. And while we did a reasonable job of it, but I think we were struggling literally to get the right speakers and getting them to agree to come or travel them and getting them to kind of participate and even find the right numbers. So while there exists, but we couldn't go beyond, let's say, about 200 women speakers of the 700 list. Ideally, we wanted it to be like a much better ratio.
So, in fact, Sital, very strangely, now, the reverse is also true, in which, like, my wife, I mean, she used to head UBS Wealth in India long ago. And she says that when she used to go for customer calls and she used to go with a junior guy, the client used to talk to that guy. And she said, you know, like, he's constantly talking to that fellow. She's like, she's the head of the business. And he said, no, he's not talking to me. He's talking to that guy. She said, no. And she said, okay. And there you can't.
Yeah, this gender bias is not necessarily in a male alone. It's in a female as well. And both will have to work together to solve it. I think we are at a stage where that is getting much
true,
more prominent.
True.
Things are getting much clearer. And again, thanks to the education level, the work culture, I think everything is changing. So I'm quite optimistic.
I think financial independence also. No, I think this thing is like with more money in the bank. So the other thing, I think the other side of this is that while there is the great opportunity and there is the need for more penetration, I think the RBI and the governments have toyed with this idea of giving new licenses, new banks, you know, digital banks and stuff like that. But I think there we've not got too much success yet. I mean, it still seems to be this. I mean, after that one wave of few banks that came up, We've not seen more of that. I mean, so is it more of a wait and watch by the government? Is it consolidation, or they're kind of waiting for some other triggers or some benchmarks to be hit before they kind of say, okay, you know, now we're going to have more maybe digital only banks or things which will kind of help grow this thing, or, you know, there'll be more last mile penetration or stuff like that.
So, Samiran, that's very interesting. Naveen, sorry, but also globally, this is a challenge, right? Neobanks globally also have struggled because somewhere there is, are they finance and should they be regulated by finance? Are they technology? Should they be regulated by technology? And that debates, it doesn't seem to have come to some conclusion. So
true.
The answer is that today the number of financial services institutions, and I'm adding fintech in there, the numbers are already large. And one side is also challenged at how do you manage and regulate them? Because there are all kind of issues it also results into, right? Because when you have a larger ecosystem, you'll always have all kind of players behaving, not behaving, some in between, right? So you also have to look at the overall bandwidth and the overall economic priorities. So I would say that the experiment is continuously on. The number of innovative ideas that are coming in are still high. Obviously, ultimately, RBI is a regulator with a mandate of running the monetary policy as a central banker, running the regulation and the supervision. So the focus will always be that the room for error in RBI's mind will always have to be, you know, in a very tolerant, in their tolerance, probably less than 10, 20 basis points. So somewhere,
correct.
Let's say that remains an issue, but I would say overall, the number of institutions that we have are already large. I think time to time, the number of entities, including banks that have been added, are quite high. But at the same time, I think there's also consolidation going on in the ecosystem, right? So they're also trying to watch. But somewhere we also have to see that we all know that eventually financial services business run on scale. You can't purely work on needs, right? And beyond a point, it has to be also profitable. It also has to work on a certain economics. And globally, no regulator, not just RBI, I mean, whether it's a SEBI, whether it's IRDA, all of them are very clear that they also monitor companies' growth and profitability beyond a certain scale, it to be in a control. They would not want you to fleece too much of a, let's say, revenues and a profits just for your shareholders' benefit. Because ultimately, these are systemically important institutions for the economy. So from that perspective, I think they also understand that if we have to achieve our economic goal, we also need larger institutions. So consolidation is equally important. And there has been experimentation. Also, I think sometimes we get impatient. We forget that IMPS to UPI and today's UPI is also about 10 years journey, right? So many of these systems that we've started, we need to give a 10 to 15 year window. Payments bank, mixed bag, but small finance bank has relatively been successful. There are already a number of private banks that are already consolidating. Digital bank, the reality is that you do have a model, right, of a neo bank in the country. You also have a payments bank, where again, there's not much of a concept of a branch. Yeah, there are some gaps there, which has been continuously under discussion, but they're also looking at the number of players left there, what can happen, what is already existing in the ecosystem. So yes, it's an opportunity, but I would say on the whole, the approach is generally positive. On the other hand, you see again, IFSCA and a GIFT City model. There's some very unique and new opportunities, right? And some of these might even come in there for not just India, but for the entire world to go to, with that sole focus on also export side of the entities from India, right? And again, you see something like NPCI International, which is again going global with the fast payment. So it's a balancing act. I mean, obviously, in isolation, one or those two specific milestones may look that slightly behind. But I think as an overall ecosystem, if you're growing continuously as a benchmark, I think we are in the right direction.
So maybe I don't know enough about this. But the other thing which I thought would really kind of take off because of the last mile advantage it has is the post office, you know, that the India Post, the bank, you know, that they, so maybe it's very good in the rural areas or whatever, because I think some 150,000, you know, post offices are there, which literally are branches of banks. But, I mean, do you have any sense where that is going? Because I think there was, I mean, at least on paper, it seems to be like a great thing for last mile connectivity, inclusion, and all the great things that, you know, we pursue.
Well, last I checked, I think their numbers were impressive and they continue to grow. And as we also understand, and as you have done many projects earlier, you know that at the places where post office is and what kind of challenges they face, right? And we've also seen that as the connectivity has improved in the remote areas, we've seen changes. We've also seen continuous new policies coming, and not just from RBI, but other regulators also, that more and more offline transaction, though digital, can also be experimented, can be planned. If you see A lot of these sandbox experiments are around it. If you see also RBIH, which is a research arm or a innovation arm of RBI based in Bangalore, again headed by Rajesh, they're again working on multiple models, including things like frictionless credit, again IDACM. So if you see the number of initiatives that are on, and all of them are at least growing, working, obviously, because in our day-to-day life, we don't connect with that institution much, so we don't realize it. We don't see it so much. The reality is it's growing.
True, true.
Even look at number of NBFCs, right? I mean, look at the, sometimes I also say that we debate a lot and we talk a lot about probably all digital, but we also forget that in between, there's a lot of contribution by other entities like NBFC. I mean, look at a gold loan process. I mean, where in the world in 2 minutes you put your gold and you get your money immediately? Whatever it is, it's a technology process, whatever you call it, but that has helped probably Indians a lot more, right? So again, vehicle loans. So there are a lot of such initiatives that have happened. Again, in-store credits, whether it's a Bajaj or whoever is doing it. You're standing at the counter, you need a kind of, let's say, on-demand credit. It's available to you. Now, how many countries have all of these solutions? And at this scale, the India, everything is also about scale, economics, and speed, right? All three things have to be there. So it's not just one factor, right? And for a lower ticket size at times. So in that sense, there's a lot of all kind of things continuously happening, which a lot of time we don't see it because in our circle of discussion, it doesn't come up.
So I know we can go on with this conversation with you for another couple of hours, but to bring it to a slightly more personal space, what do you enjoy most about the work that you do? What makes you wake up every morning with full enthusiasm to say back into the space?
So there are two or three things I learned about myself as a person. One, if I have to create something which doesn't exist, it excites me a lot. And if you see everything that I've done in my life, at least right from the entrepreneur journey of 2000, I built businesses with the concepts they were not kind of existing in the country. Whether it was a prepaid wallet, the whole multi-purpose prepaid wallet, even before the regulation, before anything else happened, we had created it. We're the first one to even allow your money to move from a SMS, from a IVRS. Right? From your internet. I mean, before that, it was only internet, which where the only credit card was working. So anything which is, I mean, this is slightly different, but I also saw myself as a convergence generation, right? I'm sure Samiran can relate to it. We read a lot of those white papers together, right? So, you know, it became a natural vision in my mind that, and in a way, I had created a personal diagram, which actually started with the convergence of our technology, which was a ICT, right? Information communication technology. To an ultimate converging economy level, that what all can happen. And I was trying to see that what are the major gaps? So one obviously was payments. The another one was the whole channel where all you can sell. The another one was the currency itself. That is there a currency which exists, right? So like this, there were multiple components. So I always got excited when there are long-term future visionary things that don't exist and need to exist. And if I get an opportunity to create it. Secondly, I've always worked with the ecosystem. So whether it's a Payment Council of India, where I could get the whole industry to work with us. And obviously, all of them have worked very closely with us. And the whole credit goes to them also. So anywhere where you have to create platformization, right? For an example, even in our business at Ritzcats, there was no ecosystem of merchant. There was no ecosystem of customers. There was no merchant integration. API tools were just the starting time. So we had to create a lot of ecosystems. So this is ingrained. If you had to bring diverse set of stakeholders together, it was a natural, I would say, ability and excitement for me that I get to meet a different set of people, understand their problems, and marry all these different stakeholder problems with one simpler solution. So whether it's a PCI for industry solutions, whether it's later after my exit with the FinTech Convergence Council, which we set up again and I chaired for the last 6 years, was about rest of the FinTech beyond payments. Again, the same thesis that how do we bring these different stakeholders? Idea was that whatever we've gone through in our journey in a digital payments evolution of the industry, the same needs for the rest of the fintech ecosystem, be it lending, be it into wealth, be it into insurtech. So we wanted to leverage that knowledge and work with the ecosystem to bring them together. And later on, something like GFF, right? So innovative, first-time stakeholders, ability to kind of bring different stakeholders. So these are some of the components that always drove me, excited me to do something, including ZFF Plus, which was again a very diverse set of partners, right from regulators to industry, to let's say different country partners, to different governments, everybody coming together. So that always excited me to do something.
So maybe one last question before we kind of wrap this up. So what does Naveen do for fun? I mean, what you know, like while you're busy doing all of these things, when whatever little downtime you get, so what do you do to kind of rejuvenate and get back to doing all this other stuff, great stuff that you do?
No, so thankfully, post my exit from HCAS in 2017, I mean, I have reached if I'm able to control my time and how I want to use it. I mean, obviously, I lost a little bit control in between when I was setting up GFF for the industry, right? But I'm fortunate enough to say that on an average, I do get 3 to 4 hours of my me time in a day. So, which wasn't earlier possible. Most days, not all days, but most days. So, yes, I have a lot of, let's say, hobbies, whether you can talk music. So, most of the time, music is always in the background and all kinds, right? From, I think, early days rock of Pink Floyd to Scorpions to Guns N' Roses to a current ones, new age like The Weeknder to Travis Scott to all kinds. So I can listen to any kind of music. It's all mixed up. I watch a lot of content, by the way, but not probably our industry, but different kinds on YouTube, by the way. So I'm a big YouTube consumer. But one thing that again excites me a lot is two things rather. One is the travel and second is the whole idea about spending time with yourself around spirituality. Aspect of it. So again, that's another thing. So I make sure that I go out at least 7 to 10 days every year where it's just me and nature probably around. And you do spend good amount of time with yourself as to what exactly is going on in your head and what is going on around you and how do you want to impact and contribute to that, right? Not necessarily in a commercial way, but in a healthier ecosystem, universal way, everything. Like we say, the purpose of life, right? So it gives me. So I used to think of this way, right? That as we grow in our life, there are certain places we get data point, then we convert into information and we convert into knowledge by practicing it. But ultimately, over a time, continuously practicing it, you also reach a place where you have a wisdom of certain things. Can we spend time to generate that wisdom and share with others? To an extent that we can, not that you can do it every time, but can we use this time to convert in certain areas, not all the areas, and other areas probably go and meet similar people who have this wisdom. That's another way to acquire that wisdom. So that's where kind of I like to spend time and do as much. And yeah, life is good. And have, if there's time, then meet friends like you, interact with, whether in these sessions, offline, wherever. So that's fun.
Nice.
That's
nice.
My idea of fun. And I forgot about the watches, but maybe one session on watches. That's something. I mean, I got into it for like 15 years now. But like you said, right? It's not just about doing a calculation on calculator versus you knowing why it has, right? How's 2 and 2 become 4? It's about that, right? Your digital watch would have done that 4-year thing automatically through a chip. But this watch doing it, which would have even stopped in between, on after that 4th year, something in the mechanical mechanism doing that after 4 years, even if your watch has stopped in between multiple times, but still on that accurate time doing it is amazing. So that's like real wisdom and knowing, right? That kind of a knowledge. I wish I had that kind of a knowledge in a lot more areas.
So Naveen, when we do an episode on time tech, we'll invite you back to talk about watches and time as technology, because we're always looking for new areas which people are not talking about in the space of technology. So time tech is one of them. And we'll just call you back for one of those episodes where it's not about money, but it's all about time. On that note, thank you very much for spending and giving us this time coming and explaining a lot of things here. But we'd love to have you on the show once again. So thank you for your time.